Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland, and George McGovern enjoyed civil debate, and the McGovern Center hosts its Civic Engagement Forum on September 29th at Dakota Wesleyan. The question being discussed is, should religion play a role in 21st century politics? Yesterday, we talked with the Reverend Barry Lynn, and today, we are talking with Rena Linda Valdson. She's the Interim Dean, Professor, and Associate Director of the Liberty Center for Law and Policy at Liberty University. And Rena, thanks so much for joining us today on Dakota Midday.
Well, thank you for having me on.
So I will just toss the big question out to you. Should religion play a role in 21st century politics?
Well, yes, the easy answer is yes, but a little more in-depth to that. I think the most important point is to realize that it has to play a role in 21st century politics, because everybody has a worldview, presuppositions that they come to the table with, so to suggest that certain worldviews, certain religious beliefs shouldn't be involved in the public square and politics of 21st century is really to say that just one set of beliefs is off the table. And I don't believe that's the America that anybody envisions for us, or that's what our founders intended either. So by default, religion will play a politics because people have sincerely held religious beliefs.
There's no middle? Is there some gray area where maybe religion doesn't play a part?
There isn't. I think you hear, you know, it's hard if you are, whatever you're doing, to say, I'm going to put aside my religious beliefs. It informs who you are, the decisions that you make. Now, that's different than saying that all laws that exist in this country must be consistent with a certain set of religious beliefs that might be set forth in the Bible or another religious text. But as far as the role, it has a role to play in the discussions. I'm entitled to vote my views, and it may win the day in the legislature or lose the day in the legislature. But to suggest the opposite, that you somehow have to separate yourself into two parts of your life, the secular and the sacred, and act that way in the public square, that can't be what the founders intended when we have a free exercise of religion guarantee in the Constitution as well.
But what if your religious beliefs violate the law?
And I think that's the core question that we're facing today, is you have competing religious beliefs. Now, not everybody considers their views to be religious views, but they're moral-based decisions that we're making on hot-button topics today, abortion, same-sex marriage. And so what we have to balance in this country is that accommodation between the free exercise clause and what the court has held with the establishment clause. You know, what can the government do that doesn't infringe the establishment clause while at the same time accommodating? So that's that big discussion we're having with, you know, Kim Davis taking place right now with the licenses, Hobby Lobby with, you know, with the contraception. That's where the balance has to come out and play out. And my view would be that where there are alternatives, for example, you know, in the Kim Davis situation, is there a way to accommodate her religious beliefs and still have same-sex couples get married? Is there a way to have you get your wedding photograph but not require one photographer to bake your, you know, do your photos or a baker to bake your cake? Isn't there a middle ground in the sense of offering accommodations? And I think what we're seeing is that it's not our side that's not willing to accommodate. It's those who are saying that we must have, for example, same-sex marriage, we must have all these rights on abortion and no accommodations for those with religious beliefs.
So there is a side that says there's no gray area, but you see that there is a gray area.
Yeah, I don't call it a gray area. I call it this is the balancing that we have to do. We have competing worldviews. What seems to be the argument of the day is establishment clause is going to win all the time, and your religious exercise is going to lose. I always use a teeter-totter picture. You know, so the heavy-weighted one is that establishment clause, and so there will be no accommodation for religious beliefs. And again, that I don't believe is it really benefits anybody, because, you know, 10 years from now, the tables could turn, and whatever, you may be in the majority now, in the minority later, and our Constitution is supposed to protect you at all times, and we accommodate even some of those beliefs that now might be in the minority or later might be in the majority. So we've got to figure this accommodation and balance out. It should not be a winner-take-all.
So let's use Kim Davis as an example and dive a little deeper into that, because she is saying, under the authority of God, I'm not going to do this.
is she's asserting two things. She's got her religious beliefs. She's asserting that she can't be forced to violate her religious beliefs. And what she's asking for is accommodation, not that they not be issued. She's asking that the document be issued by the state that allows you to fill it out and not have to require her signature under it. And so that's an accommodation. So she's not saying the office shouldn't ever issue these, but there should be a form that allows somebody to go on, fill it out, and not require her specific signature as authorizing the same-sex marriage. And that's the accommodation that some are saying should not be allowed under those instances. But she's also arguing, I think, is even another issue is taking place in our country, is the authority of the Supreme Court's decision to do what it did in the marriage case and completely redefine marriage for all 50 states with one fell swoop. And then you have a state like Kentucky that hasn't yet changed its own code, and she's required to uphold that code as well. So she's also got that conflict between the Supreme Court decision, legislature hasn't convened to change the law, which law am I following?
And would her signature then not be required for a heterosexual couple as well? Would it change the entire marriage license procedure?
It would change, yeah. She's not suggesting it just be for one type of marriage license. It is actually across the board so that no one would be put in that situation. And it's a form that could be put up on the state's website, and you download it, and then you submit the documents you need to the county clerk's office, and you're all set to go.
But it's my understanding the Supreme Court, when they issue a ruling and it trumps a state law, the state law doesn't really have to go away because it is already being trumped. So they don't have to change it? I mean, in South Dakota, we have a constitutional amendment defining marriage. So do we have to change our constitution now?
Well, I would say yes, and for these reasons, you're seeing it play out in the marriage licenses. So, you know, in your code, South Dakota, it sounds like, you know, has defined marriage as one man and one woman, and that plays out in a lot of different areas of law. So the question is the legislature has to come in and, one, decide as a state, must it follow the Supreme Court's decision, which is one question. But the one you're asking is, you know, how does that play out? And so how does our licensing work? How does it work with regard to probate and all the other areas where we've previously defined one man and one woman? The state needs to come in and clean up all of those codes to now be consistent if it's going to comply with that decision. And until then, as a clerk, she's got these laws in front of her that don't yet tell her what she's supposed to do or how they're going to play out.
And we're not seeing a rash of special legislative sessions to fix this.
We are not. No, we're not.
Should we?
My personal view is that the Supreme Court didn't have the authority to issue the decision that it issued to overcome what has traditionally been a state area of control, family law, marriage. And so I don't think we need the rash of legislative sessions coming in to comply with that decision.
So you see, as the court changes personality, I guess you can say it, philosophy over time, I mean, you see the big push. You see big pushes to challenge abortion and those big moral issues. Are we going to see more challenges even to this marriage law?
I believe, you know, for example, the Alabama situation that I think is still working its way through the court systems, where you have a state that thus far has said we're not going to comply with the Supreme Court's decision. So I believe we're going to see one, two, maybe a few other states that come along that, and it will work its way back up to the Supreme Court for a decision on that. But ultimately, it'll be state versus federal that'll be pitted, and I'm not sure exactly how that'll get resolved. With regard to the marriage issue in particular.
And will religion be an argument in that?
Well, with regard to the marriage, you know, I was heavily involved in a lot of the marriage litigation in this country that took place, and you know, the religious arguments are not themselves the basis of the arguments for marriage laws. It's historical basis, but you're arguing arguments concerning the nature of marriage, the purpose of marriage, the benefit to children and families of marriage. So when you're looking at the court briefs, you're not seeing the Bible cited throughout the briefs and the arguments. So it plays a role because it's back there behind people's worldviews. But there are people on different sides of the religious worldviews that support or don't support traditional marriage. And so it isn't everybody believes one way. But, yeah, people's worldviews going to impact what they're arguing, but that religion won't necessarily be overt as it's coming through in the briefs.
How about if your religion is not the traditional Christian religion, and should that play a role in politics. For example, in South Dakota, we have 9 Indian reservations. So should the Lakota faith play a role in American politics?
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked that question, because sometimes, you know, people think we're just advocating for one set of religious beliefs. And I believe that over time, the free exercise clause of the United States Constitution has really been minimized. And so it is for the protection of the various faiths. Obviously, there's a point if it's a faith that's doing something that is harmful to individuals. There's been some decisions about sacrificing, decisions that maybe violate laws we have on discrimination against women or other issues like that. You know, that's a balancing the court's going to have to play out. But in the general presupposition should be that all religious faiths start with the presumption that they are entitled to participate in the voice taking place in the public square.
Now, at the McGovern Forum, you're going to be talking with people along with Barry Lynn, who was on our program yesterday. Yeah. And I'm, you know, you are both sounding very much that you're right. So how does the American people then weigh both sides of this?
I would encourage people, if they haven't already, I find the founding documents of our time very important to understanding what kind of current country was created. And I understand people have a different idea of what that should look like. They disagree with the founders, but that is who we are. And if people want to change that, there's constitutional amendments to do that. But when you look back at our founding charter, our Declaration of Independence, we were clearly founded on the understanding that there are certain truths. Our rights come from a creator God, as the Declaration of Independence said, and our founders were clear. You know, Benjamin Franklin was asked soon after the Constitutional Convention, what kind of Constitution did you give us? You know, it's a republic if you can keep it. And founder after founder said, you know, we have to be restrained by our moral views, our moral underpinning. So religion was meant to play a role in the public square. One founder actually said that the Constitution wasn't designed to restrain you. It's just a structure document. It's our moral values that's going to restrain individuals from doing things that are harmful to others. So morality and religion has always been key. It was what our founders designed for. And I think we've moved too far in saying religion has to be shut out.
And in the same document says that there is a separation of church and state. So how do you read that part?
Well, I'll start with the most obvious premise. The First Amendment started out saying that Congress shall establish no religion. Now, I understand the Supreme Court has expanded that over time to now apply to every government official, but our founders' idea was we just wouldn't have a national religion like they had in England, where depending on who was in power, you may or may not find yourself in prison. We wanted to prevent that. But apart from that, you know, states were free to experiment with how much freedom they wanted to give to different religious beliefs. Now, that's not what the Constitution's been held now by our court to say, but we do have a separation of church and state, according to the United States Constitution, but that cannot mean that the free exercise clause means nothing. And to say that religion can't be in the public square and have an equal contribution to the public square is to essentially eradicate the free exercise clause from the Constitution and leave it just with the establishment clause.
And what if, you know, we talked a little bit about Lakota and supporting all religions, but what if it's something, you know, like Satanism or something like that, where they want to erect a statue of a devil or something like that? Is that something that's easily supported?
Well, I guess you asked, is it easily supported? Well, I don't know how many people would. I don't know.
I mean, but do they have the same rights as somebody who may want to put a Ten Commandments monument up?
They do. And in the sense of, you know, when you go to, for example, there's been cases where someone wants to pray at the opening of a legislative council meeting, you know, depending on what the ground rules were with respect to who they invite in, and if it's just somebody who comes in to speak at the beginning of each meeting to solemnize it, you know, it's been found to be hard to say you can't have someone in who's going to be from perhaps an unwelcome or unpopular religion. You know, in that case, it's open to everybody. And I think we have to start with that. I'm a believer that more information is good, and I believe truth will rise to the top. And so while I may not be a fan or supporter of Satanism in our country, it also has a right to participate in the public square.
It's part of the free exercise clause?
It's part of the free exercise clause.
Hmm.
Now, there are limits, obviously. We have laws against, criminal laws against certain activities, and if a religion wanted to engage in one of those activities, whatever religion it may be, the state can step in at some point and say, you're doing active harm physically to individuals, for example. We can't allow that, but other than that, it's a stated religion, it's a worldview, and the Free Exercise Clause is there for that as well.
What would you say is the next hot button topic?
Well, you like to think we've expended them all, but probably not. For me, I still see that the next go-round is going to be this accommodation question. Also related to that is what we just talked about is the federalism idea of really testing how far the federal government can go in an area where the state says, we don't think you have any authority. I see both of those really bubbling up, and they, in my mind, can drastically change the landscape of America. So for me, those are two very current, bubbling up, and will probably be in the courts in the next few years again.
Okay. Rena Linda Valdson, I want to thank you for taking time and coming on Dakota Midday today. I really appreciate it.
And thank you.
You are coming to South Dakota on September 29th. So thank you for being on the show today. I appreciate
Great.
It.
Thank you very much.
Again, the McGovern Center Civic Engagement Forum on September 29th at Dakota Wesleyan, asking the question, should religion play a role in 21st century politics? Rena Linda Valdson is the Interim Dean Professor and Associate Director of the Liberty Center for Law and Policy at Liberty University. And yesterday we had the Reverend Barry Lynn on, and you can find that interview on our website at sdpb.org.